This hour of the Jason Rancho brought to you by Northwest Safe. A lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. It's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
So we don't normally start with anything having to do with sports, but this seems like a big enough reason to. According to ESPN, Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson does not intend to sign a contract extension for this season if he does not reach an agreement by his deadline. This is a self-imposed deadline by tonight, by midnight tonight. Joining us in studio with live reaction, Bob Stelton from our sister station, 710 ESPN Seattle. So take us through exactly what's going on and what have the developments been today.
Well, they set a deadline, he and his agent did, that is going to expire by midnight tonight. So,
was there a reason why today was that deadline?
This is when they report for voluntary off-season workouts. So there's already pictures of Russell. He's shown up to workouts. There are pictures of him out there.
Which you kind of expect either way. He's the kind of person who's going to show up.
That's who he is. Yeah. And he said as much. His agent said as much. That even if they don't get a deal done, he'll still be there for the voluntary workouts, the mandatory workouts, often in a holdout situation, which he's not doing. Or guys that are just unhappy with not receiving a deal they want, they'll say, fine, I'll be there for the mandatory stuff, mm-hmm. but voluntary.
And we've certainly seen Seahawks players do this.
Certainly
the
have. Certainly have. So he is there, but the reason for the deadline was apparently there were no talks. They just weren't happening. They weren't happening. So January 31st, his agent told the Seahawks, listen, the day they report for voluntary workouts, we want to have this done. Now, the report came out from Peter King, and the problem with all of this, Jason, is it's sources. Sources say. I don't know who the sources are and how much of it is actually true. But Peter King said a source told him that part of the deadline was not only will we not negotiate after this deadline this year, we'll never negotiate with you. Like, meaning you can go ahead and franchise us next year, franchise us the year after that, and the year after that, there'll be no more negotiations ever.
So he's in a good position right now. He's got some leverage, presumably, unless the Seahawks are tired of Russell Wilson and what he means to this team, which is somewhat hard to believe.
Tired
right?
of winning? Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, he's got a lot of leverage on his side.
He does in a sense that, you know, if he's going to take that stance, which I would find hard to believe, that they're going to, 3 years down the road, the Seahawks come to him with some massive mm-hmm. deal and this agent's going to go, no, sorry, you blew it. Lose my number. I don't want to hear a word about a contract. I find it hard to believe that they would stick to that. But he's got a certain amount of leverage, but they've got it in the sense he's under contract for this year. He can't go anywhere else. And they've got the leverage of saying, well, we'll franchise you next year. We'll franchise you the year after that. So he's got a sort of risk. He's got to assume some risk over the next 3 years, right? That he's going to be healthy, that he's going to be able to perform the way he wants and perform to the level that will get him the huge deal that he desires 3 years down the road. Right now, he's in his athletic prime, 30 years old. 3 years down the road, who knows how many hits he takes? Who knows mm-hmm. if he suffers an injury along the way? Maybe that hits his, it really hits his market value, and he's not the same guy physically. He's not going to get the money that he thinks he's going to get down the road if he were healthy.
So the rumor has been that this is really being pushed upon by his family situation, where his wife doesn't necessarily want to live in Seattle. She wants to live in L.A. or New
Sierra.
York, something like that. So what exactly, what role is that playing in all of this? Or is this just generally
I think that's
him playing
nonsense.
Hard because he knows he can get a lot of money right now?
Yeah, I think that was originally started by Colin Cowherd, who apparently shares the same entertainment lawyer or agent that Russell mm-hmm. does and Sierra does. So take it for what it's worth. I think, listen, there could be as many rumors out there publicly as people want to put out there. It doesn't matter. It doesn't impact what the Seahawks do. They don't care what I'm saying, what Peter King is saying, what Colin Cowherd is saying. They don't care. They know the budget. They know their salary cap structure better than anybody, and they know what Russell Wilson brings to the table more than anybody. So what's being said publicly, what's being written publicly, does absolutely nothing to their plan. Their plan is their plan, regardless of what's being said publicly.
Should the Seahawks re-sign him with considerable extra money attached? Is he still worth it?
I think they just need I think the money, I don't think they have a problem with the yearly average of this contract. I think it's about the guaranteed money, because they've got a philosophy where they guarantee the first year of the deal, and then every subsequent year after that, you have to be on the roster. And I can't remember, I think it's like a week after the Super Bowl. And if you're on the roster, you get that year. It's guaranteed. So the likelihood of them.
I mean, that's a ridiculous point from a player perspective. Certainly a player like a Russell Wilson who should say, Okay, so you'll cut me right after the Super Bowl, and then you don't have to pay me the rest. Or if I get hurt or something, you cut me.
If he has a down year and they feel like, hey, there's a young kid coming up in the draft, and we can pay him rookie money.
That shifts the power structure to an unfair degree, and I think that the players have a point.
Yeah, it's about protection. It's about protection. So what they're ultimately trying to do is get the Seahawks to get off of what their philosophy has been with every other player and establish something new. So somebody's got to bend here. They're hoping it's the Seahawks, but they've got till midnight tonight to get it figured out.
What do you think is going to happen?
I don't think it gets done.
Oh, really?
I don't think it gets done tonight.
Do you buy this ESPN source then? That he's not going to sign anything?
No, I don't buy that either. I don't buy that either. I just don't know if they're going to have enough time to get it. I hope I'm wrong. I hope we wake up tomorrow and go, hey, deal done. That'd be great. But I just don't see it happening right now.
There you go. For more information, of course, you can check out Bob Stelton's show right there on 710 ESPN Seattle. What's the name of the show now? Because you got three names, and I always
forget. Bob Gross and Tom
on ESPN, noon to 3. Well, because if your name doesn't go first, I always think it does, because whoever I'm talking to, I assume the name goes first.
Mine goes first.
Yeah, but if I put your name last, you get all pissed off at me.
Well, because you have it
giant
wrong.
Ego.
You've got to be accurate, sir. I need facts from you.
That's Bob Stelton. Thanks for stopping by.
See you, buddy.
You're listening to The Jason Rancho. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
So if you were wondering whether or not Mayor Jenny Durkin, a former U.S. attorney who liked to pretend that she cared about the law, if you were wondering if she has officially become the type of candidate we should all scorn, you should probably stop. Stop wondering. All you have to do is read her weekend piece in the Washington Post, because it is insane. It is insane. She manages to reject while also welcoming illegal immigrants, while inadvertently insulting them. This editorial is a dumpster fire of embarrassing, pandering, condescending double talk. And if the Washington Post didn't lean in to being this anti-Trump media outlet, this piece would have been rejected. So last week, President Trump confirmed these reports that he'd like to place migrants who are caught here illegally. He would like to place them in sanctuary cities. It was a giant trolling maneuver. And it ended up exposing people like Jenny Durkin, because in this editorial, she says Seattle is not afraid of immigrants and refugees. Then nearly immediately, she goes after the plan. She criticizes the plan. Why are you criticizing the plan if it's to do something that you had asked for? So she writes in this piece, what does scare us? A president and federal government that would seek to weaponize a law enforcement agency to punish perceived political enemies. A would-be despot who thinks the rule of law does not apply to him. I have a question for Jenny Durkin. Of course, she would never answer this question on the show. And if I ever showed up to a press conference, I wouldn't get called on. Why does the mayor view bringing illegal immigrants to Seattle as punishment? Why is that punishment? How would Seattle, in her eyes, how would Seattle be punished by welcoming immigrants who are in need of help? The kind of help that she loves to say that she and the city of Seattle can provide. Now, in her zest to attack President Trump, or frankly, whoever wrote this piece on her behalf, in their zest to attack the president, she claims, number one, that she's not a political enemy of his, which is ridiculous. Of course she is. But she implies it would be bad to bring illegal immigrants to the city. One might argue that she committed a microaggression, those things that we're all supposed to be hyper aware of. She says he is demonizing immigrants and refugees to incite fear and to distract the American public from his own failures. Again, another quick question for the mayor. Why does she think Seattle, of all places, would be scared to invite illegal immigrants into a city that's a sanctuary city? Or maybe perhaps it's Durkin is the one who's scared. Then she goes on to remind us that she is, in fact, going to run for higher office. She talks about all of these things that she is responsible for. She spends a couple of paragraphs just really laying on the pandering. So thick. So thick. But my favorite part, the most laughable part of this entire piece, is when she tells President Trump that his administration could actually learn from what we're doing here in Seattle. I literally did a double take. I did this. I was drinking. I don't know if you knew this, producer Tom. I was drinking a bottle of Hint flavored water.
Of what?
Hint flavored water. It's just a little hint of fruit flavor.
So why don't they say it's a fruit flavored water?
Because it's better branded. Okay, you're focusing on the wrong thing.
Well, no, I took a little bit of a sip. Content thing.
I took a sip as I was reading this, and then I spit it out onto the screen that I was reading it on.
And what flavor water did you spit out?
Cherry.
Okay, so it's a cherry water.
No, it was a hint of cherry flavoring.
But
it was a hint.
That's the only thing in it, cherry and water. So it's cherry water.
I mean, but it's a hint of cherry. It's not overwhelming.
That doesn't make any sense. We don't call this a hint of the Jason Rantz show. We call it the Jason Rantz show. It doesn't make any sense.
It would be saying, like, the show has a hint of Tom in it. Although, in this case, that hint is way too much.
But so there's
turn off your
other...
microphone. Let me make my points. Hold on. Let me go to traffic.
Doesn't make sense.
Okay, I got it. She tells us that Trump should learn from what Seattle is doing. What is missing in this piece? All the damning statistics of homelessness getting worse, traffic congestion getting worse, an increase in property crime, rape, robbery, and murder. All happening. All trending in the wrong direction, all happen to be missing from this Jenny Durkin piece. Now, we'll be continuing this conversation later on in the show, because I was listening to Saul Spady this morning. He had such an amazing monologue on this, almost as good as something I could do. But it was fantastic. We're going to play for you that audio a little bit later. If you want to read the story, if you want to bring attention to the doublespeak, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. Text R-A-N-T-Z to the number 1-800-465-8770. That's an unbetter tax resolution hotline. You didn't realize this. We are all over Twitter. Go to twitter.com/JasonRantz. twitter.com/JasonRantz. I am just about 150 new followers away from hitting a benchmark for Twitter that unloads a whole bunch of new services, which I would really love to have access to. So if you're someone who has Twitter but hasn't yet decided to follow me, number one, shame on you. I will publicly shame you for that. Number two, I will give you the opportunity to fix this error in judgment and go ahead and follow me so I can boost my ego. Twitter.com/JasonRantz. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the campaign trail?
So Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the Democrat socialist from New York, she did an interview with a podcast from Yahoo News. It's called Skullduggery. She did it yesterday, or at least it was released yesterday. And in it, they had a wide-ranging conversation about a whole host of things. I want to focus on just a piece of that conversation because she was talking about the 2020 election. Because as of right now, assuming Joe Biden announces, and it seems like he is going to announce, when he announces, he is almost certainly to be the leader of the pack. He's got the highest poll numbers of anyone. He's certainly the most mainstream Democrat of the candidates. You may think he is a hardcore leftist, but he's very clearly the most mainstream candidate who's running. He's got the highest name recognition. And he's got the support, which is incredibly important, of the establishment class. But all of those are the reasons why people like AOC aren't all that enthusiastic.
Could you support Joe Biden?
I don't know.
Really?
I mean,
why?
Like, I will support whoever the Democratic nominee is.
So you will, whoever the Democratic
nominee
is.
Yeah, whoever the Democratic nominee is.
But you're not excited about a Joe Biden candidacy.
That does not particularly animate me right now.
Because
I think a lot of issues. One, I think that there's a, you know, I can understand why people would be excited by that. This idea that we can go back to the good old days with Obama, with Obama's vice president. And I think, you know, there's an emotional element to that. But I don't want to go back. I want to go forward.
OK, so, of course, she doesn't really have an answer. But it's interesting because what she just said is basically what I heard. It's a version of what I heard when I was at the DNC a few years ago. This was at the time where Bernie Sanders has finally agreed that he's going to endorse Hillary Clinton for president. He's going to do it on that stage in Philadelphia. And there was concern amongst the Bernie delegates that they would not end up supporting Hillary, even though it was very clear that she had won enough of the votes to be the candidate. There was the concern over the superdelegates and all that stuff. And so I went around and I talked to these Bernie delegates, these Bernie supporters, both at the convention and the protesters who were outside. And I'm not exaggerating at all. Every single person I spoke to, every single one, all said they were not going to back Hillary Clinton. It didn't mean that they were going to vote for Donald Trump, although some of them said they would rather vote for Donald Trump because they viewed him as a disruption to the system. But not a single person said they were going to vote for Hillary Clinton. Now, we go into this election. I'm willing to bet you're going to have the exact same jaded, younger delegates and supporters in the Democratic Party who clearly lean more towards the fringes than towards the moderate side. If Joe Biden is the nominee, this is not a slam dunk for President Trump the way it would be running against anybody else. But I still think that the edge goes to Trump because you're not going to have the enthusiasm of the younger voters that you absolutely need in order to win the presidency. There were a lot of people who were deeply enthusiastic about President Trump, then candidate Trump, because he was something different. He was a non-politician. He was a business person who was brash, right? He was this new breed of candidate for the Republican Party. And they got excited about that. They got excited about the fact that he was pushing away all the political correctness. They liked it. They liked that he was not a prim and proper candidate who said exactly what he's supposed to say because of some focus group telling him to say it. They liked what he stood for. They liked that he wasn't part of the establishment. And so what makes you think by putting Joe Biden in there, who everyone says, oh, he's leading in the polls, that this is going to be any different? All you're doing is putting in another Hillary Clinton. Now, the difference is I think Joe Biden has personality. I don't think he's a robot like Hillary Clinton was. I think he has emotion. I think he has charm. I think he's a generally likable person when you push aside his unlikable politics. But it doesn't matter. He is going to be seen as the establishment candidate. And the Bernie Sanders supporters, all of these younger people, all these people who are backing folks like AOC or Ilhan Omar, they're not going to be enthusiastic enough to either go out and vote. But even if they do, they're not going to be on Twitter 24/7 talking about how amazing the candidate is. And understand that in the media, a lot of us rely on what's trending on Twitter. I think a lot of us rely too heavily on it, but they rely on what's trending on Twitter to get a better gauge of this country, of the feelings towards these candidates. And what they're going to see is subdued interest in Biden and a lot of anger coming from people saying, yet again, they are not being represented by this Democratic Party. And it's going to be driven by a lot of younger people. Democrats win when they're able to get the younger people to vote. When we see the demographics of the Obama campaign, we saw them coming out in droves to vote for President Obama, then candidate Obama. They didn't do that this last time around because a lot of them were focused on their support of Bernie Sanders and they felt jilted. They were angry. So if that happens again, what makes the Democratic Party think that, oh, well, this time it'll be different? It's not. We have a president who has been attacked by this media and the Democratic Party for 2 years now without any evidence of any wrongdoing. 2 years now. Russian collusion, Russian collusion, Russian collusion. Denny Heck, the congressman out of Tacoma, saying over and over, oh, we've got a Manchurian. We literally have a Manchurian candidate here. And yet they have nothing to show for it. And yet the economy is doing well. A lot of you who just did your taxes, thank you for doing your taxes on time. You realize that you're getting a lot more back this year than you anticipated. I generally don't get anything back because the way that I do my taxes, I usually, if I owe anything, it's like $100. I don't believe, I try to do it exactly the right way because I don't want to give the government a tax-free loan. And yet this year, I got tons of money back. And it's all because of the tax cuts and the tax proposal that the Republicans were able to pass. Understand, that's not going to change in a year. That's not going to change in 2019 going into the 2020 election. People are going to feel good about the general direction of the country. And for the most part, I think people are just sick and tired. They're fatigued with all of the attacks coming from the left. And so who are they going to put up? Some dude who's a 70-something-year-old white guy. That's not going to get all the younger people excited. They're not going to get excited. So I think that people are mistaken if they want to dismiss these concerns coming from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Every once in a while, she's a good predictor of what's to come, certainly in a certain demographic within the Democratic Party. I'd love to hear from you. You think I'm off base? Do you think I'm telling it like it is? Text me, 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. That's none better. Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. We're live in the Online Trading Academy studio. In an interview you're only going to hear right here on KTTH. At 5:30, we're going to talk with a student at South Seattle College, Community College, where she was just doing a little bit of some table activism. She had a table out there for Turning Point USA, and a progressive student approached her, started to harass her, then stalked her, waited in the parking lot. As soon as he saw her go to her car, he started to speed up in his own vehicle, presumably trying to hit and kill her. He ends up hitting another car and then running away. The Seattle Police Department is investigating this as a bias incident. And I haven't really seen any mainstream media outlet cover this. So given that we are a mainstream media outlet, we don't like to ignore stories like this. So that student's going to join us at 5:30 to tell us the story. But first, I want to talk about a big narrative that was happening over the weekend. Huge narrative. A narrative, a talking point that was being pushed to basically stop us from criticizing Ilhan Omar, the congresswoman from Minnesota. They want us to stop criticizing her for saying horrible things, rotten things that she says on a regular basis. So Democrats are now basically claiming, hey, if you criticize her, you're inciting violence. She's gotten death threats because of some of the rhetoric around the criticism. So now you guys got to stop. Now, this was, to start at least, directed towards President Trump, because the president tweeted out a video of her that showed her astronomically insensitive comments, followed immediately by video from 9/11. Here are the original comments that she made.
Care was founded after 9/11.
I'll let her finish. Care was not founded after 9/11. The Council on American Islamic Relations was not founded after 9/11. It was founded in 1994. The clue is in the name 9/11, 11 being 2011. That's how you know 1994 comes before the terrorist attacks. So no, CARE was not founded after 9/11. But continue.
CARE was founded after 9/11 because they recognized that some people did something and that all of us were starting to lose access to our civil liberty.
Okay. Now, obviously, people were annoyed and upset with that incredibly insensitive way of talking about 9/11, the terrorist attacks that left thousands of innocent people dead. Imagine for a moment, because I'm not supposed to be annoyed by her statement, and no one is supposed to criticize her. Imagine for a second, some white Republican saying of the New Zealand mosque attacks, some guy did something to some people. Some dude did something to some people. Imagine the outrage, the rightful outrage, at a comment like that. Imagine discussing the Holocaust like, well, some guy did something to a whole bunch of Jews. I mean, maybe Ilhan Omar might actually say something like that, but there's a bad example. But people would, of course, be annoyed. The comments that she put out there were in context. The president put her comments in context. They're stupid comments. They're ridiculous and insensitive. In fact, when you go back and listen to all of the criticism of Ilhan Omar, all of the criticism has been based on actual in-context comments coming from the congresswoman. When she made anti-Semitic remarks, virulently anti-Semitic remarks, that wasn't taken out of context. The context was given. In and out of context, she is a bigot. She hates Jews. And she makes excuses now, I guess, for terrorists. Congresswoman, some people didn't just do something on 9/11. Islamic extremist terrorists murdered a bunch of American citizens because of their perverted views of Islam and their perverted views against the West. That's what happened. Now, Democrats really, really don't like people like me or even the president using Ilhan Omar to suggest that this is a growing wing of the Democratic Party, even though it is. But the Democratic leaders, they're smart enough to know the problem that Ilhan Omar poses. So they're not going to defend it because they can't defend these horrible remarks. So instead, they shift the conversation. They change the narrative. It's no longer about her comments that are garnering the criticism. Now it's about the criticism. Now it's specifically about if you criticize Ilhan Omar, if you continue to talk about this and bring attention to her quote, all you're doing is inciting violence against her. It is, of course, a stupid talking point that the Democrats are putting out there, but of course, CNN picks up on it. Alison Camerota this morning decided to singularly pick up on this one talking point and use it to go after Trump campaign advisor Mark Lauder.
Does the president know that he's putting her in danger?
Well, I don't think it's the president who's putting her in danger. I think.
Just by the way, I love that question. Does the president know he's the one who's putting her in danger? No, he's not. He's not putting her in danger. Calling out a stupid comment puts someone in danger. Uh-oh, send me to jail because I criticize people on a regular basis for the stupid things they say. And I've got a lot of people who I could throw in jail for criticizing me. Is that the new bar? Because I've gotten death threats before. I've had to call SPD many times and report bias incidences. I'd do that this morning. So does that mean that all the other people, they got to throw them in jail?
I think it's her ill-thought-out words that she used to describe the greatest terror attack on the history of United States soil, which killed nearly 3,000 Americans. The fact that those are her words, that's what's putting making the threats. But make no mistake, no congressperson, no American should be threatened, and no one is inciting violence. I think what they're doing is showing outrage toward words that should have been better thought out.
Well, yeah, I mean, she's saying that it's since the president's tweet that what the Nancy Pelosi and the congresswoman, and obviously the records could show this, that the amount of death threats and the calls coming in have spiked since the president's tweet. And so let's just give them the benefit of the doubt and say that that's true. Is the president considering taking down that tweet?
Well, I'm not aware of the president planning to take down that tweet, but I think it's also important that the American people realize that these are the words that are being spoken by leaders of the Democrat Party. In many cases, you've got Democratic leaders and leading presidential candidates coming out and defending those words.
It's disgusting. Now, remember, as Alison Camerota is having this conversation, I guess she's forgetting about the fact that on her very network, Trump is called Hitler, a fascist, a dictator, a despot. Did CNN or Alison Camerota call on Democrats to change up the rhetoric? Congressman Steve Scalise was almost murdered. He was almost shot to death by a Bernie Sanders supporter who believed the conversations surrounding the negative impacts of Republicans. They believed the rhetoric, the talking points. Now, I don't remember Alison Camerota reading directly from a press release of or a talking points memo from the Republican Party to condemn that, but she's doing exactly that when it comes to defending Ilhan Omar. Take down the tweet because it might incite crazy people. Crazy people can be incited by anything. They get mad when the president criticizes the media, and they call it an assault on free speech, and yet they're trying to stop him from sending out a tweet. The Good Wife on CBS tweeted out an image over the weekend from one of their episodes, and it included quote-unquote target words. And on the list of target words include assassinate President Trump and eliminate Mar-a-Lago. Now, the tweet has been deleted, but it didn't provide context for the list. Instead, it asked viewers if they can find the Easter egg. Now, I don't recall CNN being outraged over the weekend. I didn't see that at all. Instead, they gave airtime to crazy people like Waleed Shaheed. He's a senior Democratic strategist. He was talking to Brian Stelter and his fathead. And they actually made the point that there's actually a conspiracy behind what Republicans are doing here.
This is part, like you were saying, it's part of this long 50-year strategy that began with the Southern strategy in the Republican Party to divide white voters from voters of color. And this is what we're seeing with the right-wing ideological war machine, is that they target Ilhan Omar because they want leaders like her and leaders like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. They want to show to their white viewers that those leaders don't have anything in common with white voters.
They have nothing in common with most voters because they're insane. Ilhan Omar is a bigot. She's an anti-Semite. Now, maybe Waleed Shaheed is also an anti-Semite. Maybe he's also a Jew hater, like Ilhan Omar. I don't know. But it's weird that this is part of this massive conspiracy. Massive conspiracy to show that these women of color don't stand for what white people stand for. The Democratic Party is the party of white people, let's be clear, old white men. Because right now there are two leaders within the Democratic Party. In fact, all of the leadership, Nancy Pelosi, white and old, Chuck Schumer, white and old. Who's going to be the next nominee? Well, polling suggests Bernie Sanders, white and old, or Joe Biden, white and old. And yet this is part of some conspiracy from the Republican Party. No. They're highlighting a crazy part of the Democratic Party that's filled with bigotry. They're not so woke. They believe in intersectionality, this idea that because they are women of color, a Muslim woman of color in the case of Ilhan Omar, she gets to be an anti-Semite. Because we shouldn't go after women of color. Okay, fine, but that's the Democratic position. That's not mine. You say something stupid, I'm going to call it out. You say something bigoted, I'm going to call it out. Maybe I'm part of the Jewish, because I'm a Jewish member of the media. Maybe I'm part of the Jewish media cabal. We're going to get together. Ben Shapiro comes on after me. We've already got the talking points from the Jewish people behind this conspiracy. They told us to go after Ilhan Omar. 1-800-465-8770. It's an unbetter tax resolution hotline. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. We are live in the online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in. About 20 minutes from now, we're going to tell you the story of Valerie Jarrett. She is an Obama advisor who, it would appear, cheated to get on to the New York Times bestseller list. Yeah. Because no one is buying her book, and yet somehow she's on the New York Times bestseller list. A reporter with the Daily Caller News Foundation suspects some cheating was going on. So we're going to talk with him, Luke Rosiak, in about 20 minutes from now. But Iowa is trying to figure out whether or not they're going to restore the voting rights to felons who are out of prison. Senator Bernie Sanders said people convicted of felonies should never, in fact, lose access to the ballot box in the first place. He was at a town hall just recently and he was asked the question. And he said, I think that, should I do his voice? If I do his voice, it like...
Yeah, but only if it's, you know, only if you're on your game.
I think that this is absolutely the direction we should be going. In my state, what we do is separate. We're paying a price. You're paying a price. You committed a crime, you're in jail. That's bad. But you're still living in America. You have a right to vote. I believe in that. Yes, I do.
That was good. That's pretty good.
It started good.
Okay, I can't always keep it. It starts good and then it trails off. This is a preposterous position, of course. Preposterous position. The reason why Bernie Sanders takes that position is because he knows that those voters are likely going to vote for him. They want these votes desperately. They want illegal immigrant votes. This is the long game. They think that if you allow illegal immigrants to vote, or if you allow people who are currently incarcerated to vote, the vote is going to go to them. Why? It's an interesting branding piece for the Democratic Party. Because the Democratic Party is the party that doesn't believe in jailing most people, right? They don't want to jail someone for selling heroin to a kid. They don't want to jail someone who breaks into a car, who breaks into a home to steal some stuff, then go buy drugs with the money based on what it is they just sold. They don't want to throw people in jail for that. And so they know that that's their brand. And so if you're some kid who's in jail, some 22-year-old, some 19-year-old, hell, some 50-year-old who's in jail, you're given the right to vote, you're going to hear the message coming from the Democratic Party that they are light on crime. You're going to say, oh, I guess I want more people light on crime to be in positions of power. Maybe that means I won't have to do such long time in jail. They understand that when the black or Latino bad guy gets thrown in jail, the Democratic Party is there to tell them, oh, it's because of institutionalized racism. Weirdly, when the Asian guy goes to jail or the Jewish guy goes to jail, then there's nothing, but you just did something wrong. But specifically when you're black and you go to jail, Democrats overwhelmingly like to throw out this idea of institutionalized racism. Not the fact that maybe you literally just committed an act of violence. No, institutionalized racism. Woman goes to jail, institutionalized sexism. In fact, you only did what you had to do to survive in a white patriarchy. That's their message. And it's a crazy one. But they understand that this is a part of the population that they can earn a vote from. Now, Republicans can take the exact same position, right? They could. They can choose to take the exact same position on crime that Democrats are taking, because then they could basically shore up some more votes. And that actually matters in certain districts, right? I mean, when we're talking about close elections, every vote counts. Every vote matters. But the Republican Party doesn't want to be light on crime. They want to say if you're a bad guy, if you choose to do something bad, if you choose to do something bad, there needs to be some punishment. And they're not going to pander to a murderer or a rapist or a thief in order to gain their potential support somewhere down the line if they're ever allowed to vote in an election while serving time. Because when it comes to this issue, the Republican Party overwhelmingly has a strong set of principles. Now, that's very difficult for some folks like Bernie Sanders to understand. What? I have very strong standards. Yeah, I know. Your standards include fighting for the rights of murderers to vote. I mean, it goes to the Seattle activist last week that we talked about, fighting tooth and nail so that prisoners can get access to erotica. They treat all prisoners alike. There's no difference between the murderer and the dude who stole a loaf of bread because he was hungry. They treat them exactly the same. And so what they end up doing here in Washington State, when it turned out they weren't all going to have access to third-party used books, they said, you know what? We're going to fight for your right, rapist, to get access to erotica, murderer, to get access to true crime novels. That's their position, because they're social justice warriors. They're woke. Well, I think you should get punished if you actually commit a crime, and part of that punishment means you don't get to vote. You want to vote? Awesome. Don't commit murder. I feel like that's a very low bar to begin with. You want to vote? Don't commit murder. Don't rape anyone. Don't stab someone. Don't run someone over with your car. Call me crazy. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message. You're listening to The Jason Rance Show.